And welcome back to the Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94, as we are joined now by the Executive Director of the Kansas State High School Activity Association, Bill Faflick. Bill, how are you doing today?
Very good. How are you guys?
Well, a little bit chilly, and hoping that the weather's going to cooperate with Thanksgiving. I'm sure you hope that everything's going to go smoothly for the state championship football game Saturday, right?
We are so excited to be playing eight championship football games this Saturday at seven different venues across the great state of Kansas, and hoping for some great weather to match the great games and great crowds we expect at those sites.
Always a tremendous experience, especially those teams making it to the state championship games. Last time we talked with you here on the show was shortly after you became the executive director at Keisha, so it's been about 2 years. How have things gone for you, and what's been your biggest challenge you would consider in those 2 years so far?
Well, I tell you, there's never a lack of opportunity to engage, and the best part of working here at the High School Activities Association are the great people that I get to work with every day here in this office, a team of folks that are committed to the fundamentals of a very healthy interscholastic activity program where it's education-based and providing opportunities for kids. And, you know, one of the challenges is just maintaining the legacy of the association and yet not becoming stale with the things that we're doing, making sure that we're being innovative, that we're being responsive to our member schools. We're actually on a tour of the state, visiting every league in the state. There are 38 leagues and a group of independent schools, so we've been on the road quite a bit in addition to what we typically do, just doing a listen and learn session with each of those leagues and being responsive to the big issues as well as the little issues. How can we do a more effective job in supporting and leading our schools in this arena?
Keisha Executive Director Bill Faflick, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Well, you talked about doing what member schools would like to do, and you had a vote recently, Class 1A, and the 1A schools voted in favor of splitting into two divisions once again, which used to be the case, and then we recently went back to just the one class, Class 1A, without two divisions. It was yes, 70s, and the no's were 47, so that passed. And, you know, this is interesting because we have a lot of 1A and smaller schools in our listening area, and it has been a very hot topic of conversation, to say the least, here recently when that vote was released by you guys. And, you know, I'll just say up front, I'm not a big fan of the split for various reasons, but here's the thing. I can live with it because, unlike some, I don't blame you guys at the Keisha offices, because you're allowing the schools to make this decision and they voted for it. And if the majority wants it, who are you to get in their way? Who am I to get in their way as well? And if I was an AD or an administrator of, I probably would vote for it as well, because I would, one, that would be best for my school, to give my school a better chance, especially a lower enrollment 1A, to get to the state tournament, or to double my chances of making it to state, double my chances of winning a state championship. Having said all that, what was the reason for opening that up for the vote? Did you have strong support all along where people said, listen, we want to go back to the two divisions?
Well, I tell you, it was an interesting cycle that we've been on the past few years, and that split only impacts three of our activities. We have 34 activities right in the under the umbrella of the High School Activities Association. So that 1A split impacts Scholars Bowl, one of our great academic activities. It also impacts volleyball and basketball, but won't impact the other activities. Some are already, you know, divided out in terms of how they contest their championships. But we had a classification committee that worked for a couple of years together, representatives from across the state, and felt like a new proposal that put 1A back together was the right way to go, and certainly there were benefits for that. Before that first year and that new cycle was even completed, we had a proposal from a member school that said, you know what, we'd really rather have two classes in 1A, mostly because there's 117 1A schools. Now, that doesn't mean there's 117 teams playing volleyball,
right,
or in Scholars Bowl, because there's often cooperative agreements or they just don't offer an activity. So it reduces that number down. But yeah, there was a scarcity of smaller 1A schools in the championships in the first year that we did it, which was last year. But you know, our members have the opportunity to go through the system that's in place. It's designed to recognize those voices, and then a majority rules on this, and they had the support that was needed, and a lot of debate. And people often think, well, that doesn't impact the upper classes. It really does, because, you know, we start to shift championship venues and we start to see, you know, some issues with officials and the signing and the scarcity of those as well. So there is a ripple effect that nothing really happens at the association in the classification realm that doesn't impact all of the schools in some way. Certainly the most direct impact is 1A, and now we have two championships in those three activities, and you know, we'll have great championships there, just like we did last year for all of 1A together, and this year as well. We'll be, you know, we're underway, so we'll have, you know, a great basketball tournament, and we'll have a great, we had a great volleyball tournament. It's probably the highest level of volleyball I'd seen in Class 1A, and the report there was just a fabulous tournament. And but, you know, we'll have two fabulous 1A tournaments next year, Division One and then Division Two, at sites to be determined. We're working on that right now.
You know, I hear lots of people, and I'm sure you hear it too, and you do not have an easy position, certainly, and all of you that are doing all this work there at Keisha, it's never easier trying to do what's best for your member schools, and I applaud that. And I've defended your organization at times to people, I think maybe because they just maybe don't have all the facts, and that is that when the 1A split came up, people I heard was like, well, why is Keisha doing that? I'm like, they're not. Keisha's not doing that. I mean, Keisha's allowing their member schools to vote. It's a democracy, and there was plenty of votes. It wasn't like this vote was super close. It was well over the majority, 70 in favor of the 1A schools to go back to the split. And then I say, I wouldn't get mad at the 70 schools that voted for it either, because if you were in their shoes, you would probably be thinking, what's your best interest for your school and your kids and a better chance to have a state tournament experience? Then why wouldn't I probably vote for that? Now, the naysayers will say this, and I'm sure you've heard it, Bill, about the sanctity of the state tournaments. And as a media member and covering tournaments, you want the best of the best at state. And I know you guys are probably working on changing a few things compared to last time it was a split. But just for our listeners out there, I did a little bit of research based on what I could pull up bracket-wise and the records off of the Keisha website. In the last 4 years of the 1A split, where you had the two divisions in 1A, the last 4 years, and I'm just dealing with basketball here for the most part. 13 boys and girls 1A teams made state with double-digit losses. 10 of those 13 had a 500 record or worse. Without the split this past year, the worst girls' record in 1A at state was 21-4. The worst boys' record was 19-6. There were no double-digit loss teams, no teams close to having a losing record. And we've certainly seen some really weird scenarios. Altoona Midway was 5-31 in volleyball early on when he went to the split, and they made it to state. Axtell boys were 6-17, made it to state. Waverly 8-14. I just bring this up to present people that, yes, you obviously are watering things down a little bit in regards to you have two state tournaments. More teams make it. But I've got a feeling, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you guys are really working hard to prevent that from happening in the future in regards to maybe coming up with a different way of figuring out how to get the teams qualified for state so that we don't have teams with really bad records making it to state and having those blowouts?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons. Some pretty good teams have some poor records when it comes to postseason seeding, and you know, sometimes it's the level of competition you play throughout the year. The coaches have that philosophy of, you know, I want to be a 500 team because I'm going to win as many as I lose. I'm going to learn how to win, and those losses will make me better when I move forward. And some of our most successful 3A, 4A schools play 4A, 5A, and 6A competition during the regular season, and they get stretched and they get better. But you're right, we would like to honor those that are truly, you know, exceptional teams with the opportunity to participate in the state tournament. There's so much benefit for a school community to participate in a state championship tournament. So one other set of schools, another eight schools going to the volleyball tournament, it's not a bad thing. We just have to work diligently and look at data and figure out what is the right way to do that. Maybe it's in groupings that are a little bit different than we've considered before, and maybe it's a different way to slice those schools in terms of creating regionals or groupings of schools so that it's not just the, you know, two really good schools beat each other or eliminate each other early on. And that was one of the benefits of having a sub-state and a regional, or a regional and a sub-state format, was, you know, you might have been with a neighbor that was really, really good, but the both of you made it on into the state tournament because, you know, you could have a loss in that first round of the playoffs and still make it to the next round. But those were, you still had to earn it. And bottom line is the teams that get hot at the right time and that have prepared for that often have those opportunities. But you're right, we do look at that. We're working on that as I speak, our staff works very hard, listens a lot to what our coaches have to say in this regard, though we often have diametrically opposed opinions as to this is the best way to do it. So yeah, you listen to the vocal minority, but you make decisions based upon what was best for the majority of schools.
Exactly, and that's the way you need to do it. Bill Faflick, the executive director of KSHAR, guest today on the Sports Ticket. When that 1A release came out and you're showing the vote and what's going to happen with those three entities, volleyball, basketball, and Scholars Bowl, as you accurately pointed out a moment ago, I thought the most important part of that release was the please note section where it said, it is premature to believe the schedule format will return to the exact same schedule format followed when Class A previously crowned two division champions. And that made me feel a little bit better about the thing. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show today. It's to share that with our listeners out there that you guys aren't going to just say, okay, well, we'll just do it the same way we always did it. That'd be the easiest way to do it. And let's be quite frank, the easy thing for you guys to do would be not to even put it up to a vote, because then you would have one less site for a state tournament. You wouldn't have to worry about as many officials. So I applaud you once again for doing what's best for the member schools and doing what they want and recognizing the majority. I've had some people present ideas. I'm sure you've heard many ideas as to how you can maybe better seed these teams, because we know certainly in Class 1A, the TVL for years has had a ton of really good teams. And I used to work up there, and the whole talk was sometimes it's harder to get out of that area and competition's tougher than it is at state. Once you get the state, that's how good that area is. You have other pockets of the state that might not be very competitive. The level of play isn't really even close to another area. And they're always, no matter what system you have, as you know, you're going to have good teams at home that are better than some teams that make it. But we've seen seeding, and then we also hear travel, which I would imagine is a big obstacle you have to deal with. And I've heard people say, well, why can't they do what they do in football? Because we have a situation here in North Central Kansas where Concordia went all the way to Hugoton for a football game the very next Friday, which is about a six-hour drive. And the very next Friday in the second round, they had to go 4 hours to Scott City. Beloit did the very same thing last year. And I know that's a really tough obstacle for you guys to overcome, because there's not as many schools to the west. How do you break it up? How do you make it to where teams don't have these long travels and long bus rides? But at the same time, you're trying to balance to get the best teams at the state. Is that one of the things that holds you back, is the geography and travel of it all?
Absolutely. The geography of Kansas is built so that, you know, the majority of our schools are spread over of western Kansas are spread so far apart, you know, but we still pay close attention to that geography, because we don't like six-hour bus trips on a school night one way and then back again. And, you know, it's one thing to do it on a Saturday. It's another thing to do it on a weeknight. And so that's why baseball and softball are very different than volleyball, that has a sub-state Saturday. And, you know, we look at those uniquely. One of the things that we are doing this year, which is a cycle of every 4 years, a loss of instructional time survey, because, you know, we're an education-based activities program, and we want kids in school. They're not learning when they're not in school. And it's not just the kids. It's the teachers as well, because our coaches are teachers. And when you pull a really good coach out who may also be the physics teacher or the algebra teacher, all the kids in that school are missing that quality instruction. We have good substitutes across the state, but nothing like having your teacher in class every day and not on a school trip. So we look at that, we study that, we try to minimize travel when we can, yet still honor the very best to that. It comes down to a philosophical discussion that we've had a lot in the office and in our board meetings, in terms of, you know, are the state tournaments intended to be for the very best teams, irregardless of geography? Mm-hmm. And do you set up a system that allows those best teams the best chance to get there? Or is it the best teams from different geographic regions to come and represent those regions in a state competition? And there's, you know, pros and cons both ways to that. You know, the bigger the group of folks in a pool that you start seeding, the more travel is going to be involved. And that is instructional time. That's teaching time for our teachers and coaches. So we look at that. And also very important is the fact that the farther away you go, it's harder for families to go and watch their kids play.
Yeah.
And we want parents to have the opportunity to see their kids play. And the biggest fan a kid has is their mom and dad. And when they can watch them play and they don't have to take off a day of work to go and do that, that's a win. So it is a balancing act, and we have to figure out the best way to do that, and we'll continue to refine that process as we move on.
I've had some people that I know that I respect that they say the travel is it just needs to, I don't know if they want to say ignored, but they say, listen, there's already the long bus trips in football, this and that, but it should be pointed out that when you go in a long bus trip to Hugoton, as we said, that's you have one game. You don't have to, like, in when you have sub-state basketball, let's say that you did seed this thing east-west, and as we know, there's going to be schools that are really on the east side that are going to be on the west side because of the lack of the institutions. You and I both know that. And so right. You may have a four-hour, let's say you just seed it based on records, which sounds easy to a lot of people, and a lot of people say, well, that's the fair way to do it. But then you could have a situation where, as we know with Substate, you play on a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at a neutral site or a site that's determined, of course, after the first round games. So what does a school do? Let's say it's I'm trying to come up with a 1A school. Let's say it's Hodgman County, and they've got to come all the way up, and let's just throw it out there, Lincoln High School, host 1A Substate. What would Hodgman County do? Because if they're really good, they're going to play three straight nights. If everybody's going to take off a day and a half out of work, some got to work on a Saturday, and you're going to be there three straight days. That is one of the obstacles I think people overlook at times when it comes to the travel aspect. Football, it's usually a one-day thing, and yeah, it's a long, long day when you got a long bus trip. But basketball, we're talking multiple days in succession.
Right. Those rounds in succession are very expensive, both in terms of, you know, the loss of time in school, but also just the cost of traveling there and those bus trips. And sometimes weather plays throws a monkey wrench into things as well. And, you know, certainly basketball is not immune to having to compress a schedule because of treacherous roads and icy conditions and schools closing for and not having facilities available, let alone being safe to travel.
Yeah, hotels, too. If you want to stay multiple nights, that could be an issue, right, especially in a small-town area. Bill Faflick, the executive director of Acacia, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. All right, so can you share a few of the things that are kind of out there in regards to what you may change from the way it was before with the 1A split to make things maybe a little bit better from the standpoint of teams with really bad records making it to state?
Well, I would love to give you the gory details, but they truly are on the drawing board. We're going to share our refined plan with the executive board when we get back together in early January. That's our next meeting, and we always go through them and use the wisdom of that executive board that represent the different classes in the different geographic areas of Kansas. So they're always the first to hear, and so we'll keep that protocol in place. But it may end up being similar to what we've had, may be very different, just simply based upon pros and cons of what we're hearing and what we know to be sound judgment for our interscholastic program.
And just to make this clear for our listeners out there, the split would not take in effect this year. So you got more time, of course, to do that. I know, though, you guys will not procrastinate. You're working on it already.
Correct. Yeah, this is a starting 2021 school year.
Exactly. Let's shift to football for a moment. Let's get off the 1A subject. And I appreciate you answering all those questions. What about high school football starting the season a week sooner? Nebraska and Missouri almost every year starts 1 week, in some cases some years 2 weeks earlier. And if you could start sooner, and this would be the easy math here, if you start a week earlier this year, you wouldn't have to play after Thanksgiving. You could get all the games out of the way, and then people could enjoy their Thanksgiving, not worry about any kind of football practices, focusing on, oh God, I can't eat this because I got to be ready to go for the state championship game. I'm sure there's been discussions about that. Is there any way that could happen in the future where we could avoid having these games right after Thanksgiving and start the season like Nebraska and Missouri a little bit earlier?
Well, yeah, certainly that has been discussed. Usually when it's been discussed, the request is we just want to add a week at the beginning and provide an extra week of preparation and practice and maybe have, you know, one extra opportunity to play or one extra round of teams into the playoffs, et cetera. It's not usually been to move to the weekend before Thanksgiving. Some states do finish earlier. Some states finish much later than we do. We're down to the final 16 teams having the opportunity to practice this week. I just heard from a retired coach who said his best 9 years were the years he practiced on Thanksgiving Day. Now, I don't know if all the moms and dads and kids probably didn't mind, but moms and dads and travel plans that were changed because of those certainly had a had an impact and would have a voice as well. But you know, for the schools, they rally around those state championships, and you know, it is a you know, it's a neat thing to be able to play in those, and it is a sacrifice as well for our families, and we do recognize that. So there's not been significant talk relative to a 1 week shift forward. Part of that is, you know, the heat of August and the back to school time, and you know, this year wouldn't have been as drastic simply because this is a year our calendar every 6 years rolls back a week, as it seems, because we creep one day forward typically in a calendar cycle to go with our standardized calendaring. This was the year that we went back, so it seemed like we had the latest start of ever with it being August 19th, and it is. That's the latest that we can start. The next year we'll start a little bit earlier, a day earlier, but we always finish, and Thanksgiving week is always our calendar. Our championship Saturday has been the Saturday after Thanksgiving for years and years, and there's not been significant talk of making that change.
I have to ask you, this one's a personal one for me a little bit, and that is, and I see it, I've seen it the last couple of years, and I know other schools have had the challenge of this, and it used to just affect the top couple of classes, but then when things were changed a few years ago, it's went down to all the way down to 3A as well. And that is the fact that you mentioned that it's great for communities to make it the state and be represented and representing all parts of the state. And you want to support your kids and you want to travel down there and cheer on your team. But one of the problems, and I really wish there was some way we could change this, is that the last 2 years in our situation here with Beloit, for instance, but it happens with other schools. Clifton Clyde had the same situation. It happens with the 1A schools on top of that, is that football playoffs, we used to have those games on Thursdays, and then you could still go support the volleyball team on Friday and Saturday. And now what we have is most classifications, you're playing games on Friday night. And for instance, last year, I'll just give you a close example. Beloit was at Hugoton for a football game on a Friday night. The Beloit volleyball team was in Hutch for state volleyball, and you couldn't, you had to make a choice. You couldn't support both. In some cases, you've got kids that, they have families that they have a kid on the basketball or the volleyball team, and they have a kid on the football team, and they're in state competition, and you can't see both. That didn't used to be nearly as big a problem for some of those classes that it is now. Is there any way that we could, has that been discussed, or any way to change that to where schools and fan bases don't have to choose and that they can actually cheer on the football team, say, on a Thursday night and then go support the volleyball team on a Friday, Saturday, or volleyball ends up being on a weekend and they don't play Friday and football plays Friday?
Certainly it has been discussed and it's actually been executed. You know, we have a designated play date to be Friday, but for those schools whose volleyball teams qualify for the state tournament, you know, volleyball substates are done after the Friday footballs are concluded and brackets are set. Right. But we moved a couple of games from Friday to Thursday because of conflicts for state volleyball to allow those school communities the opportunity to do both, administrators and families, just like you said, a parent who's got a one playing football and one playing volleyball, and they were able to do both. The other conflict that we have is sometimes it's facilities where we're forced to. You can't play two games on Friday night on one field, so some of our districts have one field that's shared, and game will be a Thursday, and another game would come on Friday. So those are the two reasons that we have shifted from Friday to Thursday night games. It certainly shortens the prep week for the two teams that are involved, but it's even. It's the same for both. And, you know, we can't determine that until we know who the state volleyball qualifiers are and who's still alive in football. But we did make a couple of those changes. I anticipate we'll continue that practice and allow that to happen. There were a couple of situations where they decided, well, we're just going to stay on Friday night. That's what's best for our school community, and we respect that. But the opportunity to shift it to that Thursday does exist when we've got that conflict in those two regards, a facility conflict or a conflict with state volleyball. Because you're right, going to state tournament is a big thing, and it's big for the community. And the football kids should be at the state volleyball tournament cheering on their classmates, just like the volleyball kids come on Thursday night or Friday night to cheer on the football team.
I agree with you. So to be clear, that would be in this situation, it would be up to the school administration to decide whether or not they have the option to do that, whether it be a Beloit or a Clifton Clyde. I know Clifton Clyde moved their football game to a Thursday from a Friday. I'm just giving two examples I can think of off the top of my head. But it is up to the school. They can make that call, and then they just have to get it approved by you, or is that how the process works?
That's typically how it will work, is that, you know, when we try to identify those as well, but you know, when those substates come in, our bracket is set, though we do reserve the right to change those from a Friday to a Thursday upon request. If a school just wants to change it and the opposing school wants to change it, we'll still allow that to happen if they both agree. But when one of the teams makes it and wants to have it and the other team isn't in the state volleyball tournament, they may not feel the need this year, right, but they would down the road. So we support that team that wants to make it because of volleyball.
Okay, a couple more questions before I get to the off the wall. Buffer week, November 11th through the 17th this year. I think buffer week's important. I think it's important for kids to get a break. The comments I have heard, and I tend to agree with them, and I'd love to get your input on this, and because I know there's no perfect system. 64 high school football teams don't get buffer week off. They don't get it. They're still in the playoffs. And you could argue that the football kids may need that break more than other sports. I'm not going to say they do for sure. I'm just saying you could argue it with the contact and the pounding that you take in football. And then, for instance, if your team played on Friday, November 15th, and you do lose, you didn't have a buffer week, and then you turn around on Monday and you have wrestling and basketball practices, and of course we got teams that make it all the way state title game, and then they have three or four practices before having to wrestle and basketball. My point is they don't have a break. I know a local coach has given his kids that played football a year, he gave them a couple days off after they were eliminated before they had to come in for basketball, and I applaud that. How can you deal with that situation in regards to the buffer week, to where there are that many football teams that really don't get a break, because that's the point of buffer week, is to give the kids the break?
Well, it's a portion of the reason is to give kids a break, but it's also to allow other things to be featured at a school. There are more concerts and plays and other interscholastic activities that take place that are scheduled during buffer week because they know they're not going to have a conflict with a team practice or competitions that are underway. And, you know, it's a long-standing tradition that, yes, there is that break, and 64 is a large number of schools still playing, but it's we have 354 member schools, so it is just a sixth of that. It's not all of them do that, and it is a chance for every school, whether you're playing football or not, still to schedule a play and know there's not going to be a conflict, to schedule a concert and know there's not going to be a conflict and kids won't have to miss because they're going to another athletic activity. So it's good for that. It's good for our schools to have that opportunity just to, you know, when you're not continuing to play. And we don't usually get very many complaints if you're still playing. That means you're having,
sure,
a good year in football, and folks are pleased with that. And you're right, most coaches will, even those that are playing this week in the football championships, those kids coming out of football will still get some time off before they're expected to be at wrestling practice, in wrestling competition, in a basketball uniform, in practice, and suited up to play. Some kids are used to that, but it does the body good to get a little bit of a break in between there. Gives the mind a little bit of a break as well for those kids. And most coaches are cognizant of that and know that it's not the games in the first week or the matches in the first week of the season that are most important. It's the ones that come in February and March that are most important when you want those kids healthy and with their legs underneath them. So a little bit of break now is a good thing for kids even finishing with football this week.
Kesha Executive Director Bill Faflick, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. One more question on football, the football playoffs. I think you guys have it so much, you have it in line the way, I remember going back where you could have only one team made it out of districts, it was a district champion, you'd have 8-1 football teams that lose their last game of the year and don't make the playoffs. the system we have now is 10 times better than what we used to have. You have multiple teams that can make it from district and move on to the playoffs. But as with any system, there's always somebody that can complain. I'm sure you hear all that. And one of the things that people have been bringing up, and I've certainly seen it from in your backyard, people writing about in Topeka, is about avoiding rematches of district games. For instance, you could play the same team twice in 3 weeks or twice in 4 weeks, and there could be two really great teams, and they have to play each other in the second round when that's more of a state semifinal or maybe a state championship matchup. Is there been any talk about trying to rework that a little bit to where you wouldn't have a rematch, team playing each other twice in 3 weeks and facing each other in the second round of the playoffs after playing each other in week eight?
Well, there's not been much talk. In Class 4, 5, and 6A, they can actually play back-to-back. In Class 6A, we had four games that were repeats week 8 and week 9. They played each other on week 8 because it was a regularly scheduled game, and the way their records fell, they ended up playing each other again as an 8-9 seed or as a 15-2, a 15 versus 2 seed scenario. So those happen. And that's one of the downfalls of, bracketing that large number of group. There's no way to separate those. If you'd have 2 8s, you could separate the two halves and guarantee that they wouldn't play each other until two or three rounds down into the tournament. But then, you make it more challenging to have two teams that happen to be on the same side playing each other earlier than they should. So, the trade-off is, you separate the very best teams when you do that, theoretically. Again, it's based on record, and some records are better and worse than others. Depends on who you play, are reflective of the success of your team. But it is a very real possibility that you play each other, and you earn that seed based upon what you've done during the first 8 games as opposed to the last 3 games or the last 4 games, which is what the old system had to be. So, it's not perfect, but I agree with you, it's better. And if you look back, and I hope that you have shared with your listeners and folks have had a chance to look at the new book that our association put out, the 50 Years of High School Championship Football, Under the Lights is the name of the book. It's a fabulous read, and it goes back for the first 50 years of championship high school football. Brett Marshall, an author, a sports journalist out of Garden City, coordinated the efforts of many journalists and put together a really marvelous book that is available for purchase. It will be at our state sites. It's also available online, a great Christmas idea. This is not a plug. I had no intention even to talk about it, but when you think about where we've come,
right.
It talks about in the very opening chapter about a football score that ended 1-0, and it wasn't a forfeit score. It was 1-0 based upon, believe it or not, penetration points. One team made it inside the 10-yard line. The other team never made it inside the 10-yard line. So it was a 1-0 final score. One team advanced in the playoffs, and the other one did not. And boy, we've come a long ways.
Yes, absolutely. We've come a long way. And, I'm okay with the system the way it is. And I think what you're saying is that that's a vocal minority that have voiced that opinion in regards to we got these great matchups in week 2. Why can't we have those later? There is no perfect system. There isn't. And no matter what you do,
it's a flawed system when you lose.
Right, exactly.
but when you make it all the way through, and I think that, by and large, if you look at our championship lineup this weekend, oh my goodness, we have some tradition-rich teams playing each other all the way up and down, eight-player Division I and II all the way up through 6A. We've got some incredible matchups this weekend that will feature the very best high school football in the state of Kansas, and that's the way it should be.
My counter-argument is if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, whether it's the first round, second round, semifinals, or finals, if you're going to win
absolutely
a championship
true.
Anyway. All right, time for an off-the-wall question, something a little bit different and off the wall. Thanksgiving, of course, is tomorrow. I'm sure you're aware of that. What is your favorite Thanksgiving food item, Mr. Fafelick?
Oh, well, you're making me laugh. My brothers, I'm one of 4 boys, and my brothers and I were exchanging my late mom's stuffing recipe over the internet last night, and I tell you what, I look forward to the turkey, but most importantly, I look forward to the traditional Thanksgiving stuffing. That is absolutely my favorite thing of all.
Is there an item that you really don't want to come near that people might like? Like, I'm not a, everybody loves pumpkin pie except apparently me. I've been called un-American because I don't eat apple pie, and I'm not a big pumpkin pie fan. Is there something that everybody, not everybody, but people like that you're like, nah, I don't think so?
Well, that could be yams, or it could be sweet potatoes. Those are not, that's not down my alley, that's for sure. But I do look forward to the pies piece, because my wife makes an incredible blueberry pie, and I know where she is right now getting that ready to go for our family tomorrow. So we look forward to the most important thing for us is having our family together, and we'll have that opportunity. And one of four kids, and I have four kids, and now two of them are married, and so we're going to have all six together tomorrow, as well as some of my brothers and Diane's family as well. So we'll have a great Thanksgiving, and certainly wish the best for you as well.
That's fantastic. Appreciate that. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. We know you're busy. We really appreciate you taking the time to answer a lot of these questions, most of all about the 1A split and football. I'm sure there's many other things we could ask you, but we don't have enough time. Maybe another time we have you on and address those things. But I appreciate you taking the time to join us here on a Wednesday, and happy Thanksgiving, and best of luck in everything being run smoothly as possible for the state championships this weekend.
Well, thank you so much. We know the teams are going to show up, and we just hope the fans come and watch that great game, those great games, because it will be a special moment for those schools.
Bill Faflick, the executive director of Acacia, our guest today on the Sports Ticket.